It's not often you can say, without a shadow of a doubt, that someone is brilliant. But you could make a pretty good case for Prabal Dutta. He's an assistant professor of electrical engineering and computer science at the University of Michigan. And he's just been named one of Popular Science's 2014 Brilliant 10. It's a list saluting scientific innovators who are already changing the world as we know it. Prabal, you made this Brilliant 10 list for your work on energy scavenging sensors. What are those?
Well, before we get started on that, Cynthia, I want to tell you I'm a fan of your show.
Oh, thank you.
I'm a sustaining member of Michigan Radio, so full disclosure, I'm actually quite happy to be here. So now that I've successfully avoided your question, let me go back and answer it. You asked, what is this energy scavenging stuff? If you look over the history of computing, every decade, computers get smaller, they get more numerous, they get less expensive. And about a decade or so ago, we hit this transition point where the number of computers per person has increased to more than one. You know, you carry your cell phone, your laptop, and all these other things.
Tablets.
So sort of look at the projection of this, and probably in the next couple of decades, we'll have a trillion computing devices in the world. Now, you can imagine how difficult it is to charge your phone, charge your laptop regularly. Now, as the number of devices grow, we obviously can't keep powering them. And they get smaller and smaller, so we can't plug them in. So a lot of the work that I've been doing is looking at this problem. How do we ensure that computers can continue to operate even if they don't have batteries that get recharged? And so what a lot of the devices we're doing or building do is they try to scavenge energy from their environment, just the light that falls on a tabletop or the magnetic field through a current or through a wire that's carrying a current. You can harvest and turn into minute amounts of electricity that tiny computers can use. You know, there's other examples. Most electrical machinery vibrates a little bit when it operates. Those tiny vibrations are enough that you can harvest. Your shoes, in fact, when you're walking, you generate quite a bit of power. If you put electronics in your shoe, you can harvest that. Imagine a Fitbit, you never have to recharge. So we're thinking about kind of that world and what it's going to be like and how we end up powering those devices.
And the idea that perhaps someday in the not-too-distant future we won't have to have five cords with charging everybody's phones and tablets and whatever.
That's exactly right. In fact, one of the products now on the market is a wireless charging system. So you can buy a little base and just toss your phone, and it uses a magnetic field, much like your toothbrush, right? It's sort of the same idea. So you're seeing more and more of this, and we're really thinking about it as this is one of the things that's going to hold computing back if we don't solve it.
What is the Internet of Things? That was cited in the article in Popular Science about your work.
Sure. So there's two ways to look at that. There's the what is really the Internet of Things? It was the observation at one point that the number of computers connected to the Internet exceeded the number of people on the Internet. Okay, and once those lines crossed, the number of computers is growing much, much faster. But that's not really what we think of when we say Internet of Things. What we're really thinking about is kind of the post-mobile era. So if you go to Home Depot, you can see smart thermostats that will connect with your Wi-Fi, and you can control your temperature from anywhere. You can, you know, heat up or cool down your house. You know, devices like Fitbits, other wearables that monitor your activity and connect through your phone and put the information back, you know, into the cloud so you can access it. So what's happening is that we have Wi-Fi at home. We have Bluetooth Low Energy, which is a low-power radio protocol now available in phones, and we have widespread cellular technology. And what this means is there is now a network available for making things smart. And once you can make them smart, they can lead to higher efficiency, greater visibility. You know, what are your daily patterns? How is my home working? Why is it inefficient? And so as we go forward, what the Internet of Things actually does is allow us to instrument our world to make it smarter and more efficient.
More efficient means cost savings.
Cost savings, energy savings.
Energy consumption.
Exactly. Resource conservation. Exactly right.
And another thing that I saw, again, reading this, I said, what is this? And the idea that your work is enabling the tiniest computers in the world, and the term smart dust was used.
That's right.
Is smart dust?
So smart dust is a term that was coined by a Berkeley professor named Chris Pister about 20 years ago. And it was the observation that as things were getting smaller and smaller over the next decade or two, computers would be so small that you almost wouldn't be able to see them. They would become, they would shrink to the size of dust, and they would integrate sensors, they would integrate batteries and computer processors and memory and radios. And so this vision has actually driven the research community for the past couple of decades. Now, it turns out at Michigan, we have one of the most outstanding groups of microelectronics researchers, along with several of my colleagues, David Blau and Dennis Sylvester and Dave Wensloff. We've been working to realize that vision. And so nobody else in the world has achieved literally cubic millimeter-sized full computers that can communicate, that can measure, that have cameras, you know, temperature sensors, pressure sensors. And so that's the idea of smart dust. Computers so small you can't see them, and they can run forever on whatever they can harvest from the environment.
And what would they be used for? What do you dream when you think of that?
Well, so there's two things going on here. One is that they're getting smaller, but the other thing is to make them really small, we have to make them very low power. So let me take those as two separate questions. If you make computers so small you can put them almost anywhere, that enables some interesting things. So certainly, I'll give you a couple of medical applications my colleagues have been looking at, intraocular pressure sensing. So if you have glaucoma, you have risk of retinal detachment, if we can monitor the pressure in your eye, you know, we can basically detect and perhaps correct for it. Another example, you know, concussions are all the rage now with, you know, things going on in the NFL and other things like that. When you have a concussion, you have elevated brain...
intracranial pressure.
Intracranial pressure, right. So we can do intracranial pressure sensing with tiny sensors. We don't have to leave...
Not invasive. Well, it's
invasive, but you still close the suture, you know, you sort of suture the wound. And what that means is your likelihood of getting an infection is much lower. And then you can only take, you know, action when something dramatic is going to happen. So that's another example of, you know, these things are so small, you can put them in many, many places. Now, the other part of it is not just the size issue, but it's the power issue. To make these things so small, you recognize it's you either have to harvest from the environment or you have to bring the energy along with you in a, you know, battery or something like that. So we had to drive the power way, way, way down for every subsystem, processors, sensors, power management, communications. The side effect of doing that is things that are larger could be made more efficient. So imagine your Fitbit could be a ring that you could wear for a year and would never have to get recharged. Or smart contact lenses. Google, this is something that Google, for example, is working on, contact lenses that you could wear that will monitor the chemistry of fluid in your eye for diabetics. So rather than pricking yourself, you could just detect basically markers in your fluid and detect from that whether or not, you know, what's going on with your blood sugar levels. So things like that, you know, both small and low power, I think, are real enablers.
It's clear you're very excited by your field.
I am. It's a lot of fun. But you know the most exciting part? You know, I don't do a lot of technical work anymore. What's the most fun, though, is watching students get excited and trying to mentor them to help them understand what problems are really worth pursuing, how to do science well, and really trying to train the next generation to become world-class researchers.
Fascinating work. Prabal Dutta is an assistant professor of electrical engineering and computer science at the University of Michigan, recently named one of Popular Science's 2014 Brilliant 10. Good to meet you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Cynthia.